Over 2 million people have been displaced by the Boko Haram crisis in Nigeria's northeastern region. These people are scattered across official camps for internally displaced persons, unofficial camps, and host communities. Since many believed Maiduguri, the state's capital of Borno State, to be the safest place at the time, they fled there. 3 years ago, the government made the decision to cut off humanitarian aid to the displaced people and begin the process of resettling them back to their ancestral homes or places closest to them at least. These places were formerly under attack but have now become safe according to the government. The purpose of this was to create resilience in them and make them self-sufficient enough to build back their lives. But there has been conclusive proof from several investigations that the people do not feel safe in these areas and they are still prone to attacks. Hello, welcome to The Crisis Room, a podcast from Human Angle. I am Hawa Shafi Inuhu, your host for today. In this podcast, we look at crisis trends across the continent and answer the tough questions around them. Today, our Lake Chad editor will be having a conversation with Dr. Barkindu Seidu, the Director General of the Borno State Emergency Management Agency, about the state's resettlement program.
Dr. Sayia, welcome to Human Angle office here in Maiduguri. One of the major post-insurgency tasks before the Borno State government in the past 2-3 years is the return of IDPs to their various communities that have been reclaimed and made safe by the military. So how will you describe this experience so far?
Yeah, the experience is this. Before my coming to ISEMA, I thought maybe after displaced population were to be taken back, I assumed they were to be taken back to their ancestral home. And that is the common word that even you, the media, used to call it. Mm. But coming to SEMA, I realized that no, actually it's not taking them back to their ancestral home, but it's relocating them or taking them back to where they want to go. If you are to go by the international conventions, for example, like the Kampala Convention and other conventions. So the experience that I got now is that there are processes before even taking back somebody to where he wants to stay. Number one, first of all, seek the consent of the person where he wants to relocate. Then after identifying the, okay, when you realize where he wants to, or when you notice where he wants to relocate, then we identify the location that they want to relocate. Then the next stage is trying to pre-position certain components of our life. That is one, the security and safety of the place, then social amenity of the place, and then trying to see how many people are going to relocate to that. So the experience is that I've learned a lot of lessons, and we are very, very comfortable in rolling out the processes in Borno State.
There is this concerns being raised by some of the IDPs that were being relocated to their community or the places they wanted to be, especially those in the local government area. There's still scarcity of resources in terms of access to housing and then access to also means of livelihood, because they can still not go beyond like 5 kilometers outside the parapets that we build around those communities. So this is a challenge that some are even returning back. I don't know if you are aware of this.
I'm aware. If you could remember, just now I said that trying to avoid paucity of resources or maybe competition on the resources. So the state government is not relocating anybody or group of people without measuring the quantity of resources that will be available there and then relate it with the number of population that are going to be taken there. So the issue of lack of resources, I'm sure, is not there. But even if it is there, we are not aware of it. And also, if you are talking of the livelihood, no any household that is being taken back to their to any location that they want to go without being given a start of a means of start of, that is to start of their livelihood. the male head of household and female head of household who are given not less than 150,000 naira. This, at least, if you go to the Nigerian context, at least this is enough for somebody in a rural community or in a community that maybe everything is regenerating to enable them to start up. So the means of livelihood, I'm very much sure, is there. Mm-hmm. And secondly, the state government is able to pre-position the security system, the security network in that location. There is the agreement with the military, there is the agreement with other paramilitary and other security organizations in those locations. So the safety of these people were assured. Mm-hmm. And apart from that, in fact, the state government went ahead to establish and position the agro rangers. Mm. These agro rangers usually escort the farmers to their farm, and then they go and cycle, or they go to the last farm and station themselves, at least to enable the farmers farm comfortably, and also to be very vigilant and pay a very good surveillance on any body that might come to harm the farmers. Mm. So the means of livelihood, honestly, the state government has put up all the required resources. And also, not only the head of household, any married woman that is accompanying the head of household back to their location, they are given 50% of what the head of household was given.
Oh, that's...
So at least there is no any dependency.
Mm.
And apart from that, where relocating them, the state government is considering the resources, you know, since we are just starting, maybe before expanding it, most of these people who are clustered, okay, the social amenities were clustered for them, maybe within a very reasonable radius that they can move from one location to another to go and access all these amenities, all these basic amenities that life might require. So I'm very much sure the relocation is very, very successful, and the process is still ongoing, mm-hmm. and we have not received any formal complaint or grievances from any quarter, mm-hmm. either from the government itself or from those that were relocated or from our partners.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to speak on the issues of access to healthcare and education, yes. for the children that are also relocated. Mm-hmm. When the schools have been destroyed and so on, what has the government done to take care of this as they are going back to their communities?
If you could remember, one of the focus and attention of His Excellency, the Executive Governor of Borno State, Professor Ogun Omorazulu, is more of focusing the first stage of his response is the infrastructural development. In fact, I can beat my chest and say, in the whole of the country, there is no government within just 4 years was able to establish schools, build schools, hospitals, water resources, etc. So the issue of our infrastructure is particularly like the health sector and the educational sector, all were prepositioned. That is why I said they were clustered for everybody, for all the communities to access it. And if you could remember, even before the insurgency, not every hamlet or village has all these facilities. Mm. Talk less of now, but still, nevertheless, the government has tried its best to put it up, all this. And even before the establishment of this by the government, if you could remember, the hard-to-reach area and the highly inaccessible area where the people were there, at least the NGOs were there, were providing all these services. And now the government has taken over, or is taking over, all these structures and resources. So I'm very much sure all these are available, unless maybe otherwise, if there are some challenges or there are some complaints, our door is open as emergency management agency, as a multi-sectoral coordinating agency. Our doors are open. When we identify this kind of thing, then we relate, or we are related to the appropriate authority for them to address it. And this is the essence of the agency.
In the beginning of this interview, you said those who are willing to go back,
yes,
by the
Kampala, yeah, Kampala Convention Order.
Yes.
Yeah.
That is in terms of safety, dignity,
yeah,
and so on. We know that there are some other people that were not willing to go back because they are not, for example, let me give for example Baga, mm-hmm, for example, in Kuka local government or Kuka town itself. Mm-hmm. We know there are original people that are living there, but there are other hamlets and communities that in that local government. Those that consider those places that are not safe decided to choose to live within the metropolis of Maiduguri in what we call unofficial camps. And we have plenty of them. And I know Selma is aware of these camps because there are still a lot of challenges in those camps. What is government doing about these unofficial camps?
First of all, let us understand the concept of camp. What is a camp? A camp is a location or it is a space where just like a temporary activity will take place. A camp. And IDP camp came up as a result of displacement of population. And imagine, almost 13 years ago, these people were dislodged in their communities. And up till now, 13 years, somebody to still remain there. Then that person is not serious. At least, maybe 1 year, 2 years, will enable you to now start thinking how to continue with your life. That is why we are saying that, okay, relocating, we are not saying that we are not forcing anybody to go. But we are trying to tell the world that we are going to close the camps to enable the owners of that facility or that locations to also start utilizing their spaces. Example, initially the IDP camps were stationed in schools, in estates and other places. And by now, the state also wants these facilities to start utilizing them. So as you rightly ask, we are not taking anybody to any location that they don't want. For example, somebody from Baga, probably he might not have known the opportunities in Biu or in Goza or in Askira Uba. When he comes to Maiduguri as an IDP and realize that there are a lot of potential or a lot of resources that he can go and exploit in Biu. It's just a matter of then we give him what he's supposed to get and then he proceed to Biu or Baga or to Biu or to Goza or anywhere.
So as a head of an intervention agency like SEMA, yes, I'm worried by this resurgence of attacks we are having in communities, especially on farmers and so on, because there's that worry that if it is happening, how safe are people in the hinterlands?
Yeah, life of a human being, in fact, not even life of a human being, life of any living being, either animal or plant, it is very, very important to the ecosystem. Talk less of life of human being. We in SEMA, we are very much concerned about the life of every living organism, including the plants, as I said earlier. Plants, animals, insects, etc., talk less of human beings. So we will not say an attack on just one person doesn't matter to us. It matters a lot to us. But actually, now, if you are going to describe it, let us put it in relative form. The attack, let us now see at the frequencies of the attack. And the quantum of the attack and the effect of the attack, and then related to the general population. All these are, to some extent, are insignificant. And this issue or this attack is global. Even in the US, you can say, even in the US, everybody knows about it. Maybe in 2-3 months, at least 1-2 attacks in 2-3 months, 1-2 attack in the US, where they have all the gadgets and all the surveillances and everything. So the attack that is happening now, we are very, very much worried. And there is no single attack that will happen without SEMA going there to find out what happened and then give them the responses. The responses include giving them all what is required, including the psychosocial support and also guiding them how to avoid the attack. So we are very much concerned about the attack, but it should not be scared people. Even in the heart of the Federal Capital Territory, or even in the heart of New York City, attack might come. So, but still, we are trying to see that we avoid all this kind of attack. So it is it is a concern to the state, but people should not take it as a very serious issue, because security issue is a dynamic issue. Today we'll say that everybody is comfortable, everything is stable, and tomorrow something might happen and you cannot avoid it. It's just only to pre-position all the resources that might require to avoid it or to mitigate what has happened.
When you say we see how IDP camps in Borno?
Yeah, we have IDP camps in Borno State, but no IDP camp, no any formal or official IDP camp in Maiduguri. But still, the state government is taking care of this, all these informal IDP camps. Example like the Muna IDP camp, like the Madina to the El Miskin, the Khan Center, etc. All these are camps, but they are informal camps. We are still taking care of them. And right now, the state government is trying to profile the occupants of the camp to see what the government will do. And basically, the government is intending to relocate them to where they can go, then the camp to be closed, because it is all enough now to be closed.
As the head of this emergency intervention agency in Borno State,
yes,
what new ideas are you bringing to board in terms of managing this crisis that we find ourselves, so that the recurrence of it, because whether we like it or not, we know it starts from somewhere. So what are the new ideas you are trying to bring on board?
Yeah, you have rightly said it, and I appreciate you said that it starts from somewhere. And if you want to address an issue or any challenge, don't look at the secondary or tertiary consequences. Look at the source or the cause of the incidents or the issue. So, for me in SEMA, I've came up with a vision and a mission. The vision is that I see that at least always waiting for an incident to happen before responding, it is very, very costly. So if that is the case, then what will be the solution? And the solution is our mission, to see that, yes, henceforth, we try to sensitize the people, inform them to avoid all the incidences, to see that at least nobody venture into any incident or nobody create an issue that might cause a calamity or an incident. So the innovations that I'm trying to put in during my tenure is more or less like technological and scientific innovation. Number one, definitely as a SEMA body, we cannot completely rely on the meager human resources that we have. Wherever we are going, maybe for distribution or maybe for any other response or maybe for assessment, in some locations, we even deploy drones. So that will help us to like a surveillance to see what is happening while we are undertaking our activities. And wherever I go with it. And in fact, most of my staff, most of my personnel, we have given them binoculars, at least to give them a kind of comfortability that anything happen will not rely on false information that we can get from people alone, but also to see it ourselves. And apart from that, another innovation that I have started doing is issue of climate change. Honestly, climate change is one of the basic or major reasons why we are having crisis in the whole world. So SEMA, Borno SEMA, is trying to see that we address this climate change, particularly focusing on proper management of environmental resources. The population is growing. The population are growing, while the resources that these people rely on it is diminishing. So if we want to address it, it's better we now start focusing on the environmental management, like planting of trees, like almost everybody to engage in at least micro agricultural activities. What I mean by this example, even if somebody is living in half a plot or in half a quarter of a plot, that is just 25 meters by 25 meters house where there is no space, SEMA is trying to encourage them that at least to find maybe a used jerry can or any container, put soil into it, and then get just a manure just this cow dung and other animal feces, put them, then plant just two or three stand of tomato, two or three onion, two or three maybe pepper or something like that, two or three stand of maybe amaranthus, that is alayahu, or any other, or even okra. At least if you can get that 5, 6, 7 jerrycan, there is no space in your house. You can either be taking them outside or you can put it on top of your roof. On daily basis, at least no family, no household that will not require soup in their in their meals. And if you can at least get this on daily basis, you have complemented a lot of resources in your house. And this will reduce the dependency on buying them from the market. These are kind of innovations that I'm trying to put in SEMA, basically focusing on sensitization and creating awareness. People, let them respond by themselves before even government respond, at least, so that we can avoid all these kind of things. Usually people say that natural calamity, man-made calamity, man-made disaster and natural disaster. There is no natural disaster. God is not wicked on us. There is no natural disaster. Earthquake is not a natural disaster. Volcano eruption is not a natural disaster. Flooding is not a natural disaster. All these are natural causes that has to happen. And if you do not carry yourself to that place, nothing will affect, nothing will happen to you. And it will continue, it will finish its courses, go its way. You are still living comfortably. So we are trying to sensitize people to avoid all this kind of exposure to these disasters, at least to avoid maybe when it happened, then the mitigation that government will take, there will be of very much resources. It's better we invest in sensitizing people, which is more cheaper.
And to avoid activities that will lead
to that. Exactly. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Dr. Barkino. We just have like 20 minutes to do it, and that is okay.
Yes.
Our time is up. Thank you so much.
Thank you for giving me that opportunity.
Thank you so much.
I'm very much grateful. Everybody.
This is an episode of Human Angle Crisis Room. Join us in 2 weeks for another episode. The production team for this episode consists of Anthony Asimota and Abdul Karim Haruna. The executive producer is Ahmad Salkida.